I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my interviews at MrMedia.com or MRMedia.com. On today's show, I'll talk to writer Dave Thompson, who's authored a series of pop culture books. His latest is the Rocky Horror Picture Show FAQ, a thorough dissembling of the legend and myth that is Dr. Frankenfurter. Stick around, and let's do the time warp again. Please. I couldn't begin to count the number of times I've seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show on the big screen. But it's a lot. That's because in college, I worked at the Royal Park Cinemas 4 in Gainesville, Florida, and every Friday and Saturday night, it was all hands on deck come 11 p.m. as hundreds of cosplayers, not that we called them that in 1979 and 1980, lined up for admission to the greatest midnight show in town, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I was the guy at the door tearing tickets, and occasionally the projectionist, concessionist, or ticket seller seeing it all. Honestly, my young mind wasn't ready for it then, and I'm not sure I can wrap my adult brain around it any better now in 2016. The Rocky Horror Picture Show was an abject failure in its original theatrical release, but one that found a second life by literally creating a midnight circuit around the globe. It spawned multi-generational fans who dress up as their favorite characters, shout obscenities at the screen, act out the musical numbers, know every word by heart, and occasionally get drunk and screw right there in the theater. Now, we minimum wage employees found the empty liquor bottles and used condoms, always in close proximity, on the floor afterward to prove it. What many people don't know is that while the movie gets all the attention, it started life 4 decades ago as a British theatrical production in Chelsea and endures today all around the world. Dave Thompson, author of more than 100 books on rock and roll and pop culture, including biographies of David Bowie, Robert Plant, and Kurt Cobain, has produced the Rocky Horror Picture Show FAQ, easily one of the most definitive tomes on the cult classic. And with that, Dave Thompson, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. And Dave, can there ever be too much written about Rocky Horror?
Yes, there can.
Not the answer I was expecting. Okay, tell me. How does that happen?
Gosh. It means a lot to a lot of people, and a lot of those people had access to typewriters. It's just one of those things, I think, that it gets in, you know, as you pretty much said there, it just gets into your head. And you feel, I must write it or else something terrible will happen.
Hmm. So perfectly normal people, you know, set aside
great swathes of time and sit there and just slavishly pound out their thoughts on Rocky Horror. Yes, it's almost a cottage industry, I think. But it's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to do this book?
It came to me in a vision. It was something, I hate to say it, I'd always wanted to do. I first saw Rocky Horror when I was 13 at the theatre in Chelsea during its second theatre.
Hmm.
And it just stuck with me ever since, and it's always been on my mind. You know, I would just love to tell the whole story and see where it goes. And finally I did.
And why does Rocky Horror rate this kind of treatment? I mean, at the beginning of the book, you talk about some of the other theatrical productions that, you know, with Rocky Horror has its roots with, back to the 60s. But none of them have gotten this kind of treatment, and none of them have endured as a cult in quite the same way.
I think Hair comes close. I think people feel closer to Rocky Horror because it still feels more like a cult. But, you know, Hair can revive whenever it wants and finds a new audience. It didn't really suffer the midnight movie circuit because the movie was such a huge hit. Rocky has that lovely underdog feeling to it. So it doesn't matter how many people you know who love it and how many times Fox say they're going to remake it, it's still like a secret cult that only 17 people truly appreciate.
Let me see when this was. I have it in front of me. Did you see the Entertainment Weekly reunion story and photo of the cast?
No, I managed to miss that.
Ah, it was actually kind of entertaining. Bostwick and Curry and Sarandon and Meatloaf and Patricia Quinn all got back together, and it was kind of fun. It was interesting.
Oh, actually, I did see that, but I didn't realize it was Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, yeah.
Joys of the internet. You don't look what site you're on. A terrible thing to do.
It was actually part of their 25th anniversary issue. I'm trying to get the date here in case anyone wants to look it up. I can't find it. It only says the 25th anniversary issue. It doesn't actually have the date on it for some reason. Let's see. Okay, because people will go crazy. October 16th, 2015, so about 6 months ago.
Okay, yes. I did see the pictures.
It was interesting. The interview was interesting because, as you reference in the book, Susan Sarandon, I guess, was kind of the only movie star or almost movie star at the time. And the rest of the cast kind of says that you get the sense that she was maybe a little full of herself. She did catch pneumonia from the working conditions, and
there's always been a lot of controversy amongst fans. You know, it's like, oh, why did they have to have Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick? But I mean, when you come down to it, you know, the movie or those two characters were American. It would have been stupid to have had English people or anybody else playing Americans when you could easily find one.
We are everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, those characters, you know, it's funny. I never thought about it because, of course, I didn't see the play in the early 70s. Were those characters played by Americans in the...
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the way you said it, I thought maybe I misunderstood.
No, I was talking about the movie. The play was pretty much completely English unknowns, or else it was, oh, I recognize her from such and such a TV show.
Got it.
And I mean, it worked, because I don't think you really expect authentic accents on the stage, particularly sort of on a small stage in a very small theater. So it worked, but when it went to a movie, you know, the play had already played in America. It was essentially an American-made movie, even though they did it in Britain, American-financed. It made sense to have, you know, as accurate casting as you could.
I see. Yeah, it's interesting. Years later, I found myself working at the St. Petersburg Times newspaper with a guy, and I knew him for years, and his name is Terry Tomlin. I did not know for years that he was Susan Sarandon's sister. When I found that, Susan Sarandon's brother.
And when I was just wrestling with that concept.
Yeah, and it was, and then when I found out, I've never said a word to him about her or the movie, but I was just overwhelmed having dealt with it for 2 years at college and seeing her on the screen and, you know, of course, her career. It's just it's so different from the rest of her career, and you know, it just,
yeah. But I mean, I think overall it is one of her greatest roles, because it is so different, it's so unexpected, and she plays it so well.
Mm-hmm. How deeply did you have to dig to find new facts or new nuggets of information for the FAQ, or was the challenge really to organize all the existing knowledge along new subject lines and to just get it organized, get your arms around it all?
It was partly that, but I think my approach to this one was I didn't really worry about finding things that were sort of hitherto unknown. I just wanted to tell the story as I saw it. And emphasize the qualities and the performances and productions that I thought were deserving. You know, things like writing about Reg Livermore, who was Frank in the original Australian, was so much fun because it's like Rocky fans know, yes, Reg Livermore played Frank, but he's had this amazing career and made some phenomenal records. So it was great to just go, you know, down into the basement and dig out my Reg Livermore collection and play them and sort of thrill again to these utterly insane versions of Leo Sayer songs that he habitually recorded.
Good old Leo Sayer.
Yeah, he did a great version of Bowie's Space Oddity. he concentrated on covers, but he did them in sort of the role of different characters with different voices and the most over-the-top arrangements. Phenomenal. So I wanted to write about things, you know, like that, and you know, the Brazilian glam rockers who played in the first Rio version, and you know, so on and so forth.
Well, that's what makes this so interesting, is that it's not just, okay, here's behind the scenes at the movie and that's it. You really connect the dots from the original theatrical production through productions around the world, the movie, the shock treatment, the sort of kind of sequel.
And the rest of Richard O'Brien's sort of playwriting career, because that also... Everybody knows Richard wrote Rocky Horror and, you know, did, you know, the stuff more recently, but there was a whole slew of musicals that he wrote during the 70s that just got completely overlooked. I mean, they got nailed by the critics. I was about 17. I went to see one he did in London. It was called Disaster, and really, it was a disaster, but I loved it. Yeah, it was... In its own way, it was as good as Rocky Horror. I remember very little about it, but I remember being just completely overwhelmed. And it was great to sort of dig into the memory and just recall that. And then look at some of the other things that he did. And likewise, Tim Curry has played so many brilliant roles over the years that you don't want to nail him just as Frankenfurter.
Right.
Yeah, you want to catch some of these other roles. And again, yeah, his musical career. You know, three terrific albums in the late 70s that really are forgotten today. So a lot of this book, you asked earlier, has too much been written about Rocky Horror. I think with this book, I did try to sort of focus on areas that haven't really been written about. Not... to be contrary, but simply because those are the things that have always interested me.
I've always enjoyed Curry. As a matter of fact, I've always felt like we've never really gotten enough of Tim Curry. It just seems like this is a guy who should be working more in bigger projects. And, you know, he's, 68, 69 at this point, so that's probably not going to happen. But I always felt that we were lacking enough of his work.
I mean, he did a brilliant Shakespeare for the BBC pretty much straight after the Rocky movie. And you know, then, of course, he was in Legend, which is one of the all-time great, awful movies. Yeah, with that very sort of young and callow Tom Cruise looking like a frightened rabbit.
I always thought that he, as I over the more recent years, as I came to know the show, and I was not I'm not a long time viewer, but I always thought, especially seeing Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who, it got me wondering what Tim Curry as Doctor Who would be like.
That would have been brilliant,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Curry is one of sort of the great uncast Doctor Who's. It's him and Robin Hitchcock.
Oh, that's another interesting one. Now, you actually, there's a point in the book where you actually connect the dots between Rocky Horror and Doctor Who. Is it too much to ask you to explain that to people?
A lot of the cast went from one to the other in either order. Patricia Quinn was in a particularly great episode in the 80s where she just played this sort of... almost like a sort of a German World War II commandant. She was terrific. But yeah, a lot of Doctor Who cast members have at different times been in different productions of Rocky. And yeah, it was fun drawing those lines together. And because I'm a big Doctor Who fan.
Do I recall? No, I don't have it open to the page. David Tennant. There's a connection with David Tennant, even.
There is, isn't there? And my mind has gone completely blank. I told you not to ask me difficult questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, come on. I didn't ask you what color socks Magenta was wearing, did I?
They were blue. Forger.
Very good. Very nice. No, I would not. I would not do that to you. All right, so for the skeptical Rocky fan who's, you know, watching or listening to this interview, what kind of things can they find in the book that will surprise them and deepen their appreciation of Rocky, all things Rocky?
I mean, the true Rocky fan already knows exactly what it is they like about the show and they want to know. And it will come down to things like what color clothes were they wearing on the third day of filming, and precisely how severe was Susan Sarandon's pneumonia? How haunted was the house that, you know, they were working in? Things like that. I think what this book brings to the table is an appreciation of Rocky's cultural impact, not only in the US but elsewhere. You know, the Argentinian production that took place during the last years before the junta came in, and that was burned out of the theater by presumably sort of right-wing reactionaries who thought it was disgusting. I always found that tale fascinating. I could never find out much about it because news did not really get out of Argentina at that time. But, you know, the idea that Rocky should be, you know, a symbol of everything that was disgusting and depraved about Western entertainment. Yes, it is, and we know that, but it's fascinating to see that actually acted upon. So, as a cultural... I lost my train of thought. You can cut that, can't you? Culturally, Rocky is incredibly important. In England at the time, it transcended so many unspoken barriers. As I said, I was 13 the first time I saw it, and as you said in your intro, pretty much, I came out of that theater and it's like, what was that?
Right.
Do I really want to know what that was? I went simply because, you know, I'd be on the bus to visit me gran, and we went past the theater and there was like a very intriguing billboard, and I'd read a few things about it in the music press. And it's like, oh, that sounds sort of really glam rock and fun, which is what you think when you're 13. And, yeah, I was utterly stunned by it. And I think, in a way, Rocky is really how I got interested in the history of not fringe theater, but theater that pushed boundaries on a major stage. You know, so you do have things like The Dirtiest Show in Town and O Calcutta and even Hair. So I think somebody who comes at Rocky purely from I love the movie and I can recite every line will find out a lot more about why those lines were there, what they meant at the time, you know, when Richard O'Brien wrote them, and how the cast built on those lines to create something that would stand the test of time and is still capable of, if not shocking people, at least making them go, really?
really?
Yeah, my throat hurts.
Oh, well, I'm not working you too hard here. I have to tell you that, well, a couple things. I've interviewed a number of authors of these FAQ books for
all
plugs.
Of them know their subject better than I do.
No, you're doing just fine. But what I always find interesting is that Applause does these books, the FAQ books, but they don't cling to the same format. At least, my impression is that you're turned loose as the author. Because none of these FAQ books is the same. Now, is that for the author? Is that good or is that bad in this situation?
I think it's good. There's a lot of freedom in the series. If we all wrote to the same format, it would get incredibly boring. I think for the writer trying to adhere to a blueprint that they did not necessarily agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine what it would be like for the editors?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, there's 50-odd of these books. I think you'd start having nightmares in the end. One thing I like about the book is that although it's called FAQ, the questions are not really asked. They allow the reader to almost like, it's like those make-your-own-adventure books. It's like make-your-own-questions book.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find the answers somewhere within.
Right. And is there do you have a particular chapter that you were proud to get past an editor, for example? Because you do get to plot these things out mostly on your own. Is there?
Yes. No. I mean, that's the other thing I love about this series is there's no sort of, you can't say that or do that.
Mm.
I have a habit in this book, I will admit, of sort of wandering away from Rocky to talk about things that are tangentially linked. That's fine. Yeah, as long as the connections are there and you're still connecting the dots, it's fine. You know, a lesser editor might say, oh, that feels irrelevant. A reader will get bored. That's not the case here. You know, it's one of the few series of books, one of the few successful and long-running series of books that doesn't underestimate the reader, which is becoming an increasingly rare phenomenon in present times. He said very disapprovingly. Yes, children, I am actually 200 years old, and I'm bemoaning the fact. because we do live in an age where, you know, a lot of magazines, an increasing number of books, are basically big headlines and shouty sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
The FAQs, I think, allow the writer and the reader to relax into information. You know, there doesn't have to be 50 exclamation points on every page.
Right.
And we don't need to be continually reminded how exciting everything is.
And one of the things, this is what I was getting at, one of the things I really love about the book, this particular FAQ, is the chronology at the end of the book in which you build this timeline of really every significant Rocky Horror development, starting from the birth of Charles Atlas on October 30th, 1893, on through the play opening at the Signet Theater, I think in San Diego, just last month, March 2016.
Now, okay, I will admit that was a pig to put together.
Yeah, okay.
Because every time I'd think, oh, I'm done, I'd say, oh, no, I haven't included. Yeah, that was an awful lot of legwork or mouse work, actually both. But it was so rewarding when I finally decided I could not add another line or else I'd go blind.
It is fascinating. I mean, and it goes on and on and on.
I mean
that in a good way. It's, if you're a Rocky fan and you're going to get together with other Rocky fans, you have this resource now that you can call upon, and that lays it all out. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I was really proud of the discography as well, because, I mean, there are Rocky discographies online. And I'd look at them and think, you know, wow, that's really complete. But, oh, they've missed out. So I really just started compiling it for myself. And again, it just got bigger and bigger. And finally, it's like, this has to go into the book because it's so insane.
Well, and it's quite
you
useful.
You really need to know, you know, like 150 different versions of Time Warp
right.
that are out there.
Well, it's a great song. I want all the versions I can get.
I don't know. There are some really horrible ones.
I want to share with people exactly how long this is now that we're talking about it. It begins on page 279. And this is just the first appendix, the chronology. And it goes on to page 332. Doing the quick math in my head, that is 53 pages of chronology. Holy crap.
I know, and it's like, normally if I encountered that, I'd think it was just padding. But
right.
when you actually just sit there and go through it, you know, date by date, it's like, wow, you could never have fit all this into the text. The book would have ended up, you know, telephone directory sized.
Well, and not even in that. Well, I guess it's probably mentioned in there, but earlier in the book, you have two pages devoted to the Rocky porno video, the Triple X parody. And it's funny because I was thinking as I got into the book, there had to have been a – I mean, it's a bit of a sexy movie to begin with at a certain level. But I thought, yeah, surely there is a porn version of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
There's actually three.
Ah.
And I'll rephrase that. There's three that I'm aware of.
Oh, I see that now. The Funky Fetish Horror Show – the Rocky with an I, Rocky Horror Picture Show, a Triple X parody.
That's the best one. But the strange thing is, Rocky works because it leaves so much to the imagination. When the imagination actually isn't catered for and it just becomes a porn film, it loses a lot.
Hmm.
I, they stick to the story and they do some great parodies of the song. But actually seeing what could be going on, it's like, oh, no, that's not right. That's not how I want it to be.
Right.
Yeah, which of course would bring us to the this apparent remake that we're going to be treated to, which is, if they're going to remake it straight, what's the point? And if they're going to change it, it's not Rocky Horror.
Right. Yeah, it seems an unlikely choice to be remade for a TV network.
No, it's very likely because it doesn't really involve any imagination, does it? What's popular, Rocky Horror? Let's remake it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle meet the Avengers, meet... Yeah, every other great TV show or movie from your past that has been remade badly in the last 20 years...
Mm.
It's just one more in that line. He said, without having seen it, and you watch it, it'll turn out to be brilliant.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm dubious.
I was surprised. In all fairness, I have not been a fan of some of these network television theatrical remakes. I watched a few minutes of Peter Pan, and that was all I could take. But I watched the Grease production that Fox mounted. And I had to admit, when it was over, that I had sat through the whole thing, and I was pretty dazzled by it. And I thought,
really?
Yeah, I thought maybe there are, and I love the movie more than anything. But I thought, you know, they actually may have added something to it here that was clever, and it was certainly done by someone who, you know, who got it, who understood what made it charming and what made it provocative and. Just, you know, what made it fun to watch. And hopefully that's the kind of person who gets a hold of, you know, redoing
hopefully,
Rocky.
Because, I mean, because that does make a difference. I mean, it does seem to be very rare.
Yeah.
But, you know, flipping back to the porn parody, the strange... I mean, I watched a few of those out of this... I'm not even going to explain why. Why should I? I've seen a few of them, but they always seem to be made and cast with people who loved the original.
Hmm.
And, you know, if you take out the porn stuff, you're still left with something approaching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still left with something that understands the spirit of the original movie. Mm. Not every parody does it, but the good ones, catch it. The Bewitched one was hilarious.
Well, I might just go have to look one of those up.
Yes.
Now, how is someone who has probably seen the film several times over and doing the book?
Probably not as many as you have.
Well, that's sort of what I'm getting at. Is I've never seen it without an audience, because that was just, you know, that was the way
I saw
it, because I had to work it week after week and deal with it. But how different an experience is the Rocky Horror Picture Show without an audience, to watch it on a DVD, for example, in the comfort of your own home, without 10, 20, 300 people around you? Is it still as entertaining?
I think it's more entertaining, but I'm one of those people who doesn't even like to hear popcorn being rattled when I get to the theater, let alone people with water pistols shouting out the dialogue a few seconds before it's spoken.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm a total curmudgeon when it comes to that.
So you
first time I saw Rocky with audience participation, I was horrified.
Ah.
I, and then tried to imagine sort of other favorite movies with the same thing, you know, like performance or cat people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know, right, cat people. Cat people would be interesting.
But it has to be the Natasha Kinski, Malcolm McDowell one.
Right, that's what I was thinking. Yes. Yeah, that would be interesting with a live audience that was interactive.
Behind you. Well, Polanski's Tess would be a great audience participation movie.
Oh, I don't know that I could think of that. I was thinking, as you said, cat people, I was thinking of Nosferatu, the Kinski remake.
Yes, that would be great.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of movies that I think would work better audience participation than Rocky. Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, sorry.
The Exorcist, could you imagine?
Yeah. Yeah, I had the former Entertainment Weekly film critic Owen Gleiberman on about two or three weeks ago, and we were talking, and Rosemary's Baby was the movie that his parents took him to see at a drive-thru when he was 9 years old, and it wound up having quite the impact on him. And so when you said Rosemary's Baby, I was laughing, thinking of him as an adult having been seriously harmed by that movie, going to, you know, and seeing people talking back to the screen and, you know, all that kind of thing. Well, so I gather that maybe you have not ever dressed up to be part of the cast? Have you been through that?
No, although, again, when I was a teen, my girlfriend and I did sort of go through a magenta and riffraff phase.
Ah.
She was magenta, I hasten to add.
Oh. Once you said girlfriend, I didn't even think twice about it. But if you felt the need to clarify, okay.
It was great, because London at that time, we're talking sort of the late 70s, London was just alive with just junk shops where you could buy the coolest clothes.
Mm.
And you know, she found pretty much a whole sort of 1920s maid outfit.
Mm.
And it was like, that is just such perfect magenta.
Hmm.
You know, so then, you know, I had to sort of reciprocate with the riffraff. And I think we may have gone to the theater dressed as that once.
Oh, interesting.
But more sort of out of a sense of mischief, and because, you know, at the time nobody else was doing it, so we probably looked a right couple of idiots. But
oh.
Yeah, we were like those people that go to Kraftwerk shows wearing red shirts and black ties. Oh, and you all thought of that independently?
Oh, my. Well, so before we let you go, what's next? How do you top the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Well, my most recent is a book about David Bowie cover versions.
Ooh.
Which is called The Freakiest Show. And I just decided, it's been another of those sort of long-standing, dirty little habits of collecting bad cover versions of David Bowie songs. And then one day I decided, wouldn't it be fun to get good ones as well? and then wrote a book reviewing what I consider to be the 300 best, and then just doing a very long and uncommented upon list of everything else.
Wow.
Which, you know, really heroic people would sit down at YouTube one day and just go through one at a time and probably scar themselves forever. And my next sort of big book is, it's another FAQ on Robin Hood.
Robin Hood, really?
Yes.
Douglas Fairbanks to Kevin Costner to Mel Brooks and...
No, this is more like Harrywood the Wake to Jonas Armstrong. It's like, it's going to be sort of like Rocky Horror. It's the full story going back to sort of pre-Robin Hood medieval legends through to, I'm sure there'll be a new movie or TV show out by the time I'm finished.
No doubt.
So through to that.
Wow.
It's great fun because, yeah, I can watch old Robin Hood TV shows and twang rulers on the table so it sounds like an arrow. Yeah, so that's what amuses me these days.
Oh, the life of an author.
I know, it's so hard, isn't it?
Really, really. Well, folks, listen, you can order Dave Thompson's new book, The Rocky Horror Picture Show FAQ, Everything Left to Know About the Campy Cult Classic, from great retailers everywhere, or you can get it right now at a great price from MrMedia.com. If you are at, if you're watching this or listening on MrMedia.com, just below the video running, you can see the cover of the book. Click on it, and it will take you to Amazon.com. You can order the book and have it electronically quickly, or in your grubby little hands within 1 to 2 days at most. Dave, website, Twitter, Facebook, are you a social media guy? Can people catch up to you?
I have a website. It hasn't been updated for about 15 years, but it's DaveThompsonBooks.wordpress.com.
Wow, that is an old website with that address.
This is it. And there's also Dave Thompson Books on Facebook.
Okay. Good. So people,
yes,
do.
I am there.
The people can find you and interact and talk about the stockings that Susan Sarandon wore, or the stockings that Tim Curry wore, for that matter.
They were green. Actually, they probably weren't.
They may have,
cost that.
They may have been after so much use and not enough cleaning. They could have been.
Ew.
And on that thrilling note.
A delicious note.
My goodness. Dave Thompson, pleasure talking to you about Rocky, and brought back a lot of college memories for me, which was bizarre and interesting at the same time. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you. That was great.
Recorded live before a studio audience full of riffraffs, magentas, Columbias, Brads, and Janets, damn it, far more than one tiny living room can possibly contain, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.